And now Brian Johnson, in his NFL debut, never missed an extra point in college. This is, in essence, an extra point from 33 on the way. And good for you, kid. Splits the uprights, a beauty. 22-year-old rookie out of Virginia Tech, a pressure kick to give New Orleans the 13-10 lead with a 1:56 left.
And New Orleans go on to win and improve their record of 4-2 on Monday Night Football. 13-10 was the final over the Seahawks, who are really struggling without their star quarterback, Russell Wilson. And that was Monday Night Football last night. A rookie hitting the game winner with 2 minutes left in Seattle. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. Wade and Dusty with you. Tomorrow, Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest will join us to talk Chiefs football. We'll also have K-State in focus tomorrow as well. So stay tuned for that tomorrow on the Sports Ticket. We begin with local sports. We have a lot to cover this week.
Yes, and thankfully we have time to get that done. Not a whole lot going on locally here in the beginning of the week, but it will be a very, very busy end to the week on KD Country 94 and Z96 Point Through the Lake. We will have high school football locker room chats coming up tomorrow and Thursday nights, so stay tuned for those. We'll start the locker room chats a little early on Thursday afternoon, about 4:30, and then we'll have Football Express at 5 going into our playoff games on Thursday for football on KD Country 94. Osborne's hosting Hanover. And on Z96 Point Through the Lake, Lakeside is at Frankfort, 8-man Division II first-round playoffs. And both of those games will have pregame at 5:30 and kickoff at 6 o'clock. And then on Friday night, 2A playoffs, Beloit hosting Lakin at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6:30 on Z96 Point Through the Lake, ncksports.com online video at the Beloit Trojan channel. Also Friday, complete play-by-play coverage of state volleyball for our area teams for Beloit in Class 3A. Also in, and that'll be in the morning, and then creeping into the afternoon session there. Also, 1A Division 1 will be the Lakeside Lady Knights on Z96 Point Through the Lake, starting at 8:30 in the morning and then going in to the afternoon as well. And then afternoon-evening session will be the Smith Center Lady Red on KD Country 94 in Class 2A. So the full match and broadcast schedules can all be found at ncksports.com. We're looking forward to all the coverage, and we'll keep you up to date and have previews of those coming up later this week. A preview of all of our athletes that have made it to state cross country will be on our sportscast as well. So stay tuned for all of that coming up here this week. High school sports and state competition coming up this weekend. State football playoffs beginning Thursday and Friday as well. So that's a look at what we have. Again, all the broadcast schedule at ncksports.com.
All right, Big 12 football coach was fired yesterday. Texas Tech head football coach Matt Wells has been fired after 2+ seasons in charge. Athletic director Kirby Hocutt said in a Monday afternoon news press conference that he met with Wells that morning, conceding that Wells was surprised and didn't agree with the decision. Red Raiders are 5-3 this season. Hocutt said Saturday's loss to K-State, in which Tech blew a 14-point second-half lead, made it clear that there was no point in waiting. Tech is 0-2 at home in Big 12 games this season, likely be an underdog in the remaining four games at number 4 Oklahoma, home against number 22 Iowa State, and to number 15 Oklahoma State in the finale at number 16 Baylor. Under Wells, Texas Tech 1-6 against ranked Big 12 opponents since 2019. Only KU and West Virginia have worse records over that span. And here's Kirby Hocutt, the athletic director of Texas Tech, former K-Stater himself, explaining the timing of the firing here in the season where Texas Tech, once again, has a winning record and the coach is canned.
There's really no ideal time to make a decision like this. I think as we looked at the 30 games that Matt Wells led us and the 13-17 record, the 7-16 record at conference, the fact that we were 0-2 in home games this year from a conference perspective, there's not a good time to make a decision, to make a change like that. But just given where we were, and you looked at the full body of work and the program collectively, we felt it was inevitable, and today was the day that we wanted to move forward.
Okay, I'm just going to say this right now. Coaches get paid a lot of money. This is one of the reasons why they get paid a lot of money. There are buyouts. I know that. I've always talked about the person that created the buyout idea is a genius and has cost a lot of universities a lot of money over the years. But here's the problem I have with this, and there has to be more to this story. Like, I just don't understand how you fire a coach who's only been there for 2.5 seasons. How in the heck can you create anything if you're given 2 years in college football? Like, the first recruiting class he has, at best, would be juniors right now. And odds are some of those were redshirted and are sophomores that maybe or may not even, he might be lucky if half the team is his recruits.
Yeah.
Can you help me with this?
And again, what we talk about, right, wrong, otherwise, one of those years is a pandemic year.
Yes.
And it's like, what do you do? I mean, that changed everything from a recruiting standpoint.
Sure
you couldn't
did.
Go into homes and recruit. You know, their dead period was longer. You couldn't even have any contact for longer periods of time than most coaches deal with, and it impacted everything. And so I can't explain it, to be completely honest with you, unless they just felt like it was going the wrong direction. But again, they are 5-3. Now I know the conference record's not great at 7-16, but it's got to be a booster that's really, really upset.
That's, I think, what
or
it is. This is about boosters.
The guy's name is Dusty he mentioned him in his press conference yesterday, that has like all the money invested in Texas Tech, and I'm guessing it's that gentleman.
And then there's somebody that just had a $20 million donation recently
that. Yeah, and I'm guessing he's making the calls right now for Texas Tech football.
See, this is the problem with, you know, listen, I talk about it's all about money. That's what college athletics has become. But when you have somebody that isn't even actually really part of the university.
Employed by the university.
Not employed by the university. I mean, what's next? I mean, let's be honest. We got people in this country, whether it's just in country in general or in the world too, by the way, not just this country. And then, of course, in athletics, they got way too much power because they have more money than everybody else. And so then they decide and they say, well, you know what? We don't. And that's the thing. You know, if you're a coach and you have a philosophy and you know it works, but you know it's going to take time, and a booster who has a ton of money talks to you and you say, well, I'm sorry, but this is the way I do things, and I know it will work, and that booster doesn't agree with you, you've already crossed the booster and you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So you got to kiss boosters' butts, and I think it's sad because I'm not a big fan of kissing people's butts
no.
at all. Because I think that means everybody's fake. And I don't like fake people. I like people that are somewhat blunt, if not very blunt. Okay? I really do. And we have less of that in society nowadays. And now, it's like if you're blunt, you're going to be canceled. And if you're blunt, you're going to get fired. Or if you want to stick to your guns, and I'm guessing Matt Wells did, but I don't know. Maybe there's other things that are going on that we're not aware of. But listen, we talk about Nebraska firing their coach after they win 9 games. Okay, in Nebraska, there's a high level. There's a high standard. There was. When Frank Solich and Bo Pelini were fired, there was still a very high standard in Nebraska. You know why? Because they won 3 out of 4 national championships in the 90s.
Yeah.
What the heck's Texas Tech standard? I mean, I'm sitting here, Cliff Kingsbury, who's 7-0 in the NFL right now with the best record in NFL, had a losing record at Tech. Maybe the problem isn't the coach. Maybe it's your university and your football program. Maybe you should look within and take care of all that, because I don't think it's fair at all for a coach to have 2-plus seasons and 1 year, as Dusty accurately pointed out, that was COVID. To me, he had 1.5 seasons to turn it around. That's almost virtually impossible. Can you imagine? Think about this for a second. In today's society, in college athletics, Bill Snyder, Mike Krzyzewski would be the two right off the bat I would come up with that would absolutely be complete busts as head coaches.
Yeah.
Do I need to explain this? Bill Snyder inherited one of the most god-awful football programs in the history of college football. Did he turn it around in 2 years?
Not two.
No, it took a while.
It was actually about 3.
Yeah.
He had a good year, then he went backwards, but then
right
after that it was all forward.
But the point is, if season three, and remember, he didn't have to deal with a COVID year.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say anytime in season 2 or 3, Bill Snyder was catching heat, and Mike Krzyzewski was back in the day when he was with Duke. He had a very bad season early in his career. There was talks about firing Coach K before he became Coach K. And what do you know? Patience paid off. And yes, there's times you're patient and it doesn't pay off. I get that. But there's just so much pressure to win, and it's like you're in the Big 12 and you're Texas Tech. You're 5-3. Like if you won that game against K-State, which you should have, you're up 14-0 early, 24-10 at half. If Texas Tech wins that game, do you think Matt Wells is fired yesterday?
probably not yesterday.
But why? What's the difference?
There's no difference.
You have the same schedule coming up, so you think you're going to be 5-7
is what they're assuming. You're bowl eligible at that point.
Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah. And I don't know if that means anything to them or not, but
I mean, if I'm Matt Wells, I'd be surprised. I wouldn't agree with the decision either. And I'd be like, dude, you didn't even give me a fair chance.
Yeah.
I'd be like, dude, you do understand there's a thing called a pandemic that hit last year, right? And I'm sure that happened in the conversation. I'm sure Matt Wells brought it up.
Yeah.
Matt Wells is going, seriously? Well, if I'd known this, maybe I wouldn't have come here in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think the message that's sent to any, listen, if you're a guy interested in the Texas Tech job, you got to be going in with both eyes wide open.
Yeah.
Because you got to know that you don't have a very long leash. And I've said this before, too. You look at Nebraska. I think this is a great example. Nebraska, were there a whole bunch of the top flight coaches lining up for that job after Frank Solich was fired after winning 9 games and after Bo Pelini was fired after 9 games? No. Why do you think that is?
The expectations are ridiculous, and they don't want to go into a situation like that. Like, they don't want to go in a situation where, hey, if I lose 3 games a year, I get fired.
Well, first of all, the message Nebraska is sending when they fire coaches that win 9 games is, you got to win 10 or more.
Yeah.
That's pretty lofty expectations, okay? So what you're saying here is that Texas Tech, the message to the next new Texas Tech football coach is, by year three, you have to win 6, 7, 8 games. Because he was 5-3. Who's to say Texas Tech wouldn't have beat Baylor? They could have won at Baylor. I mean, they could have easily been bowl eligible. So I would say Matt Wells could have easily been 6-6. So you're basically saying you want more than 6-6 by year three. I think that is somewhat unrealistic at the University of Kansas right now. I mean, can you imagine Lance Leipold being hired and being told, dude, if you don't win 6 games year 3, you're gone. Now, Texas Tech's got a better situation right now. But I'm flabbergasted by it. It shouldn't surprise him anymore. Guys get blown out after 2 years, get blown out 2-plus years, and there was 1 year was COVID. It's ridiculous. There are people with a whole bunch of money that have so much money that they just hand it over to a university because they've got that much money. And they believe that they can become the power broker and decide who's going to run the university, who's going to be the head football coach, or maybe I want to say, you know what, I suddenly don't like basketball coach Chris Beard, so I'm going to get mad at him. And next thing you know, he goes to Texas. Now I'm crying in my beer because he's gone. I mean, there's too much power. Some people have way too much power. And if good luck, Texas Tech. That's all I'm going to tell you right now. Good luck. If you think Matt Wells wasn't good enough for your university, and maybe he wasn't, but I don't think he got a fair shake, and I definitely didn't think he had enough time to get it done. You're letting one person have a whole bunch of money run your athletic program. Kirby Hocutt, if this is true, that one person, which he referenced in a press conference, which is pretty scary when you reference him by name.
Dusty Womble donated $20 million and has the practice facility named after him now, after that.
What's the point of Kirby Hocutt even being there? What is he, a puppet? I mean, some of these ADs have become puppets.
They have.
And there are other people pulling the strings. And I say, Texas Tech, congratulations. Enjoy whatever you get next. Because if you think somebody's going to roll in there, this is the same university that fired Mike Leach. They didn't have any idea how good it was. You know, this is the thing that cracks me up is KU blows out Mangino after a 5-7 season the year after they were awesome, right?
Yeah.
Suddenly he's a bully. No, you thought you should be better, and you were wrong. You were dead wrong.
Yeah.
It's been 13 years, and you still haven't recovered.
Yeah.
For Mark Mangino being fired. That was one guy that proved he could win at KU.
Well, Tech hasn't recovered from Mike Leach being
fired either. Tommy Tuberville
went 8-5, 7-5 a couple years, but that's the best they've ever done is 8-5 since.
Look, the ceiling for Texas Tech is 8 wins.
Yeah.
So if that's what you're really going after is 8 wins, do you think you're going to win the Big 12? I guess maybe when OU and Texas leave, you might. I doubt it. Yeah. But I think it sends a horrible message. And if I'm a prominent coaching candidate, the only reason I take the Texas Tech job is they're going to give me a lot of money, and I'm going to make sure I get a dang good buyout because I know if I don't perform in year 3, I'm fired. I'm going to make sure I get my money.
Yeah, Yeah.
I want a lot of assurances before I take that Texas Tech job.
Yeah.
That's going to cause them to not get as good a candidate as they like. Well, and I by the way, what's so, sure. what's so appealing about Lubbock, Texas?
Just not a lot.
Not a lot.
Yeah.
So congrats. You just got rid of a coach after 2+ seasons who has a winning record. Shake my head.
Yeah. Not a whole lot of people that want to go to West Texas to work if they don't have to, I don't think.
And you got to compete now. You know, TCU's gotten better over the years in football, of course, in the Big 12. Of course, they're struggling this year. You got still Texas A&M in your state. You got Texas in your state. You got a lot of people deal. Baylor, you got to deal with that. You know, was really bad for just a year or two, and they bounced back after the whole Art Briles scandal.
Houston's
into your conference as well. I mean, it's not even playing field, but apparently some guy with a whole bunch of money deciding it is.
Yeah, somebody had said, and it's funny because I didn't listen to the whole press conference, but I read the story about it, right? Some of the quotes that he had, and he said something about, oh, we've been number two in the country before in our football program.
When?
And so we can have that success. It was when Crabtree was there in 2008. They got all the way up there.
Man.
And
that was a fluke.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, first of all, Mike Leach isn't recruiting Michael Crabtree and Graham Harrell to come back, I don't think.
You don't have anybody like that on your team now.
Yeah. And it's like,
that's the problem. We got to fire the coach.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to find a coach that can bring in that kind of talent to Texas Tech anymore right now. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're just somebody that's going to be just outstanding.
Maybe they get lucky.
Hey, yeah, I want this job if Dusty Womble's going to pay me all this money.
Listen, I'll take the job. After saying what I said, I don't care. I'll be a puppet. Tell me what to do.
And when give me $7.5 million to leave. I'll
listen.
Give me a chance.
You go ahead and give me. You go ahead and give me. I'll be the low. Listen, I got to pull this up. Why don't you pull it up for me? The lowest paid coach in the Big 12. Find me the number. I think it's $2.5 million. Okay, I'll be the lowest paid coach in the Big 12. I am putting my hat in the ring. Sorry, Dusty, you're on your own here at the radio station. All right, I will, but I'll donate back to the station to help you. Okay.
So what
I'll do is I'm going to apply for the Texas Tech head football coaching job. Prior experience, I've coached flag football. I think that's quite a bit right there. And my flag football teams, according to whoever keeps stats, back in the day when my oldest son played, we won a couple of championships. So yeah, yep, you betcha. And I believe I have an extensive playbook with different colored circles to help the players. If they struggle academically and you help them cheat so they're eligible, I can give them the circles so they know which one they are. I think I can paint a good picture. I've got a little three-ring binder. I got some laminate sheets, and I can even draw arrows on it. And I'll be willing to be – I'll go to Texas Tech. I will be willing to be paid the least amount of money of any head coach in the Big 12. I will accept whatever that salary is, but it's got to be right close to the lowest, okay? Dusty's going to find
it. It's Chris Kleiman.
Kleiman's the lowest paid coach in the Big 12.
I'm trying to get down to the part where it says how much he makes.
Okay, so I know it's over $2 million at least.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take at least $2 million. I'm going to go to Texas Tech. Here's the thing. You can tell me what to do. Mr. Doug Womblad or whatever your name is, Womblad, you go ahead, you pay me my $2 million, and you can tell me exactly what you want to do. I will make sure that if I get fired, I want a five-year contract because that's pretty standard. I want a five-year contract, $2 million a year. Yes, you can throw in incentives and bonuses, but I'll be honest with you, I don't think it's going to work out very well anyway, so why bother? But okay, put that in there. You get it yet?
It's 2.8.
Sweet. Even better.
It's 16.9 over 6 years because it escalates 200,000 each year.
Okay, cool.
I like it.
That's even better for me. So tell you what, I won't even worry about 2.75. I'll cut you a $250,000 discount per year, Mr. Womblad or Wamblad or whatever your name is. And I will accept being the least paid coach in the Big 12. I will take $2.5 million. I don't even want any incentive bonuses or clauses. Don't need it. $2.5 million per year, 5-year deal. I want a $5 million buyout, which is very cheap. Okay. And I will be doing whatever you want me to do for the most part. Okay. I don't want to get too graphic here, but you can tell me exactly what you want me to do when it comes to football team. If you want me to pull a quarterback, if you get mad at the running back, Mr. Womblad, if you want me to play three quarterbacks at the same time, if you want me to run a 10-1 defense, an 8-3, whatever, you just tell me. If you want me to run with three tight ends in power football, you want me to run option, I don't even know anything about option, but I'll do whatever you want me to do. For that money, fine. I'm going to tell you it's not going to work out, but you got a lot of money. You're willing to throw it off and throw it away and write it off as a tax deduction, I'm sure. So, Mr. Womblad, I'll be happy to come here and let you be actually the coach, but you just pay me to be your puppet. I'll be more than willing to do that. More than willing. And so then if I, you know, and give me at least 2 years. Okay. If you can give me just two, then I'll make $5 million plus a buyout and I have $10 million bucks. And you know what? You got to coach the team without anybody knowing you did. I think that's a fair deal.
Yeah.
I am willing to sign up for $10 million and I'm willing to get fired after two. I am.
Yeah.
And I'll be happy to retire on that money. So my hat's in the ring. I will let you, Mr. Wamblad, or whatever your name is, I will let you, since you're so rich, I'll be willing to be your puppet. You can pull the strings, and I will go, and I'll dance for you, and I will do exactly what you want for the football team. And if you want to call down, and I've got a fourth and two, and I'm about ready to go for it, and you tell me to punt, done. Done. Absolutely done. Not a problem. You know, you want me to give it to a running back 40 times, it's averaging 1.8 a carry? Done. I'll do it. I'm getting paid. Why do I care? It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. What's next? He's going to hire a good friend of his to be the next head coach at Texas Tech? Could very well happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where you go from there. It's not like Matt Wells was a guy that was like a big-time coach coming in, right? Like,
yeah, no.
How are you going to get
that was the best you could
like
do
that,
then,
right?
That was the best you could do then.
I mean, it's still names like we heard last time around. You know, Matt Wells, Neil Brown, Chris Kleiman, Seth Luttrell. Like, those kind of names.
Seth Luttrell ain't doing very good, by the way.
No, he's not, but I'm just saying, you
he was
know,
a hot commodity.
Those kind of names are the names that are going to be coming
still
up for this
names.
Job. It's not
Sonny Cumbie, who's on your staff, who's
is it Dana Dimmel, you know?
Yeah.
And those kind of names are going to be coming up. There's no
that.
Way Dana Dimmel, I would take it. He's in West Texas right now, but
right.
I don't think I would take that job.
Not
but
his age,
it's names like that that are going to come up. Dana's a little older than these guys, obviously, but that's not. It's not even Tommy Tuberville, who was on the back end of what he was doing there. It's not. It's definitely not. Somebody asked yesterday in the group, I was like, who'd be a good hire for Texas Tech? I said, Cliff Kingsbury's could be good for him.
The guy's more. This tells you how the program is at Texas Tech. He has more success with the Arizona Cardinals in NFL in a tough division than Texas Tech in the Big 12.
Yeah.
Let me ask you one more question. We'll move on to the next topic. What kind of message does this send to the rest of the Big 12? And what I mean by that is, we know, listen, let's go back to the K-State-Texas Tech game. I said it yesterday. If K-State loses that game, which they probably should have, K-State would be 0-4 in Big 12 play over a year without a Big 12 win. Granted, COVID was a part of it. Chris Kleiman would be 3-4, losers of four in a row, 0-4 in the Big 12 had they lost to Texas Tech and not rallied. Matt Wells would be 6-2, and I think still employed today. And Chris Kleiman, there'd be a lot of heat about Kleiman needs to go, which there was already heat before the game. Then I think he bought some time. He didn't buy time for his AD. Gene Taylor ain't going to fire Chris Kleiman, okay? But my point is, do you think something like this, and this is what I worry about the trickle-down effect, do you think that there are, well, I'm sure there will be, but do you think this is a dangerous precedent set? Because if you're a K-State fan and you're not a big Chris Kleiman fan and you say, hey, Texas Tech fired their coach in year three, why can't we fire Kleiman?
Oh, and I think that precedent was set well before Matt Wells.
Yeah.
But
a lot of coaches get fired in year three.
There's not.
I'm trying to come up with one in the Big 12 that's ever happened.
Prince was.
Well,
but it was going completely the wrong direction, and you knew that. Was Turner Gill in year three, or was it four?
I don't know. I think.
I'll have to look it up. But, I mean, I'm just like, you know, those situations where you could, it's so obvious.
Yeah, oh, sure, I get
it's going the wrong way.
I don't know how Texas Tech
was not like that, like just completely obvious. But, I just think that's kind of it's an epidemic, I really think, right now. Whether it's year three, four, whatever it is people giving up way too early.
Yes.
On even year two, I mean, it's happened in some places. People just giving up way too early.
Turner Gill was fired after two seasons.
So it was two seasons, yeah.
He went 5-19.
Yeah. I knew Turner was fairly early, and I knew Ron Prince was after he lost to Kate, got blitzed by KU in year three.
Right.
And so, I mean, it happens. Obviously, it's not a normal thing.
I guess it also depends on what you inherit. If you inherit a program that's, you know, middle of the pack and you take it to downwards, then I could see being fired a little sooner. But it's not, I mean, Texas Tech wasn't
Cliff wasn't blowing people out of the water here. I just went through the records there earlier. I mean, it's like not.
They're 5-3 this year. If they're 3-5, I would be.
3-5, 5-3. There's a big difference. I mean, 3-5, I guess I'd understand a little bit. They go in the wrong direction, but they're 5-3, and they could have easily been 6-2. I think it is a dangerous precedent.
Yeah, but like I say, I think it's kind of the society we're in right now.
Instant gratification.
People just want it right away. And,
yeah,
and whether
that's
at Texas Tech or if it's at Kansas or whether it's at Duke or North Carolina State, wherever it's at,
right.
People just want that right away. And it's been trending this way for a while.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
All right. Byron Kennedy is something of a local legend in Tampa after this weekend. Getting and then giving back the ball from Tom Brady's 600th career touchdown pass, the Buccaneers have agreed to give Kennedy, who's only 29 years of age, a package including season tickets, autographed memorabilia in exchange for the ball he originally got from a celeb, Mike Evans, who was celebrating and then forgot it was number 600 and tossed it to Kennedy. Brady was on Monday Night Football with Peyton and Eli Manning last night, which, by the way, if you haven't watched that, it's kind of funny stuff. Brady was talking about how he enjoyed playing against Peyton, and then Eli goes, "I enjoyed all our matchups with you, Tom," because Eli won two Super Bowls against Tom Brady. I thought that was pretty good. But guess what? Brady's up in the ante in regards to what Mr. Kennedy's going to get. Brady's going to give him a Bitcoin. Bitcoin, if you don't know, not too long ago was about $20,000. Now it's $63,000 in value. The digital currency would mark one of the biggest prizes Kennedy has received in exchange for granting the Bucks an abrupt game day request. The team has already committed to giving him two signed jerseys, a signed helmet from Brady, a signed Mike Evans jersey, as well as the wide receiver's game cleats. He got a game ball, plus a $1,000 credit to the Buccaneers store and season tickets for the remainder of 2021 and all of 2022. And you may be saying to yourself, well, by golly, that guy scored. Do you know how much that football that he had in his hands for a short period of time that he immediately gave back to the employee of Tampa Bay? Do you know what that 600th career touchdown pass, that game ball, do you know what it's valued at?
I've actually seen it.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
It's half to $1 million to maybe even $2 million is what I've seen.
I've seen $750,000. I've seen $500,000. Yeah. And I'll bet you
most of them
million.
I saw said it in between half and a total million.
But just put it this way, it's at least $500,000.
Yeah.
It's worth at least $500,000. So this guy traded a $500,000 bill for $63,000 in Bitcoin.
Which is $62,000 this morning. Now.
Okay, okay.
It's going down for me. Better, okay. I would have just sold it.
But it could end up blowing up to where it ends up being just as much or more than, I mean, that could actually work out for him.
Yeah.
But right now.
I would probably hold on to something like that just to see what happens.
I would too. Right now, he has a $1,000 credit at the Buccaneers store. Okay, so that'll be gone. He'll spend it. Season tickets are 20.
And it won't take very long to spend $1,000 at the Buccaneers
store. Three jerseys, maybe. Season tickets, remainder of 2021, which is half the season, all of 22. Like my oldest son said, I would say I want lifetime tickets for four. Lifetime season tickets for four, my whole family. If I have seven kids, I want 9 tickets. But that's what I would demand. I'd want season tickets for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's what I would. I wouldn't settle for just part of 21 and the rest of 22. And trust me, the Buccaneers can make that happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, maybe this guy's going, well, Brady will retire at the end of 22, and I don't want to be here anymore anyway. But when you add up the value of what he's getting, it's not even $100,000. And what he had in his hands was worth at least $500,000.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. He probably didn't know that at the time when he got the ball. He might not even known that was Brady's 600th touchdown.
Yeah.
Evans forgot. If it were me, my oldest son says, listen, I wouldn't have given the ball back. I would ask for the moon and the stars. I'm like, yeah, but it's not your ball. I'm like, I mean, Tom Brady threw it. You didn't do anything to earn it other than Mike Evans accidentally it wasn't Brady that handed you the ball.
Yeah.
Saying you can have it, you know, like he did with a kid that was battling brain cancer and gave him a cap.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told my son, I said, I probably would have given it back. Now, I don't know if I would have known that was a 600th. If I'm a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, I probably would have.
I feel like,
so,
yeah.
I think I would have, and then
somebody
I would have known it was worth something.
We would have known if it was a Chiefs player, right? Because they would have been talking
right,
about it. We
and I think, yeah. I think if Mike Evans gave me that ball, I would have hugged it and probably squished the air out of it so nobody takes it from me. And I think, I would have known, of course, somebody's going to come up to me and say, hey, we want that ball back. And I would have held on to the ball and said, okay, let's talk about what we can get. And I would have held out for a lot. And guess what? I would have got a lot.
Yeah,
and I would have said from the very beginning, listen, I just want to make this clear. I'm going to give you the ball, but here's what I want. I would have asked for at least season tickets for the rest of my life. I would probably ask for, I probably would ask for a suite.
Yeah.
Seriously, yeah. I think I'd ask for a suite. Of course, that guy was sitting near the front row, so he's already got good tickets.
In Tampa, the weather's usually okay. So.
Well, it rains sometimes, but you're right. But I think, I mean, I would have shot for the moon and the stars. Yeah, I would have. I would have wanted dinner with Brady. I think I would have. Let me take this back. I would like dinner with Gazelle.
Tom can come, but Gazelle has to be there. Like, I, you know.
Honestly, I'd be telling Tom he can stay away. I just like to talk to your wife for a little while. But Tony Romo and Jim Nance on the TV broadcast, when they saw what happened, like, and Tracy Wilson reported on what they were giving the guy for the football, they go, oh, dear Lord, that's a terrible deal. And then I think Nance heard Romo's like something about, well, maybe you want, you know, I think something with Gazelle, you know, meet Gazelle.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, that might be part of the package too. I would have got probably more than this guy got initially, although now more and more is being...
Yeah, he's getting more. That's like Brady said last night. He lost all of his, you know, his bargaining chips he lost his leverage when he handed the football back
right.
so easily.
But what I like about it is he did a nice thing and gave it back knowing it's not his anyway. And so now he's being rewarded for being a nice guy. And I think that's cool. I think that's cool. And I would have given it back. I wouldn't have kept it. My oldest son says, I probably would have kept it.
Like, I would have given it back.
I would have given it back.
At some point.
But I don't think I would have given it back that quickly.
No.
So, but that Bitcoin, 63,000, you know, 10 years from now, that might be worth 630,000.
Yeah.
Or more. So, I mean, that might not be bad, but what a crazy deal that was.
Yeah.
We turn to the World Series. It's the Braves and the Astros, game one tonight at 7:08. This is a crazy story. I didn't realize this until this morning, and I heard your cut on it. Brian Snitker is the manager of the Braves. He's been a lifer in baseball. He's been in baseball for 45 years. He's been in the minors, pros, back to the minors. This is his first managerial job in the big leagues. He's done a wonderful job with the Braves. And they're in the World Series for the first time since 1999. What I didn't know is that his son, Troy, is the hitting coach for the Houston Astros, the team that he's going to play against in the World Series beginning tonight, game one in Houston. So the Snitker family is going to get a ring.
Yeah, he said that at the end of the game one. And he's like, we're going to have a trophy in one of our houses.
Yes. The question is it going to be dad or son? I'm pulling for dad, mainly because son works for a bunch of cheaters. But son, I'm sure, wasn't any part of the cheating before. I'm cheering for the Braves. I'm cheering for Mr. Snitker. And then the son hopefully has many years to get his thing. This will be probably the best and maybe only chance for Brian Snitker to get a World Series ring as dad, although he'll be very proud of his son if he gets one.
Yeah.
So it's a no-lose for the family. Here's Brian Snitker on his son, Troy, the Astros hitting coach. It'll be Snitker versus Snitker. Not Snickers, Snitker.
It was always a family affair when we, you know, Troy, bat boy, and take care of the umpires and work in the clubhouse. I'd go home after games, and the clubhouse guy would bring him home 2 hours later. You know, so he's come by all this naturally pretty much. But it's always been a family affair wherever we went. I'm very proud of him. I mean, he went about it the right way. He's always been just a really hard, dedicated worker. And, you know, he got his foot in the door, and like a lot of us have over the years.
Pretty cool story there. So mom is probably going to be a little torn, cheering for both to do well, of course. Probably the best scenario would be the Astros hit a whole bunch, get a whole bunch of runs, and the Braves win in seven. It means the hitting coach has done his job, right, for the Astros. You know, the other thing, too, is Dusty Baker. I like Dusty Baker, and he messed up. Remember when he was the manager of the Giants, and he thought they had it won against the Angels and so forth and so on. And then, of course, the Angels came back and won Game 6 and won Game 7. Dusty Baker's a lifer, too. Tremendous career as a baseball player. He's been a very solid manager. And Dusty Baker wasn't part of the Astros cheating. He came in after, had to help clean up the mess a little bit, inherited a very talented team, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I will say if there is one part of the Astros winning, and I really have nothing good about the Astros winning the World Series except for this one thing, and that is Dusty Baker would finally get a World Series ring. Because I think he deserves it as well. Here's Baker on what this team, how special it is.
You know, the fact of, you know, everybody talks about that window of opportunity to win. And then most teams go from that opportunity to win to the bottom and basement and build it all over again. But this team is totally different from the top down. And, you know, Jim Crane doesn't really, you know, believe in tearing it down, believe in adding on and keeping the right pieces there. And, you know, I got to commend James Click for you know, revamping our bullpen, but keeping the team together. I mean, even there were some things that I didn't know how to feel or necessarily agree with, but it's I got to commend him that he was right and things have worked out.
They have. It's the Astros and the Braves, game one tonight, 7:08 in Houston. I'm cheering for the Braves. I'll go ahead and pick the Braves with my heart instead of my head. I actually think the Astros will win the series. I'm really hoping they don't. Dusty picked the Astros yesterday in the series. But there's a former Royal that could have a big impact on this series. Jorge Soler missed the first four games of the NLCS after testing positive COVID-19. He didn't start game five or six against the Dodgers because Adam Duvall, Jock Peterson, and, of course, Eddie Rosario, who was NLCS MVP, is just hitting the cover off the ball. But in the World Series, of course, what happens, which is this is what's weird about baseball. I've had this conversation with my oldest son as well. He goes, why don't both leagues have the DH? I'm like, good question, son. Oh, so why in the World Series do you DH only gets to play half the time? Is that how it works? I said, yeah, that's right. He goes, that's stupid. And I agree. It is dumb. So, like, Jorge Soler can play games 1, 2, 6, and 7 in the visiting park, and he'll be the DH.
Yeah.
But if he wants to play in games 3, 4, and 5, he's going to have to play the outfield and now take away a spot because the pitcher is going to be in the lineup in the National League park, which the Braves are the National League team. So Jorge Soler, some people think he's going to, with that short porch at Minute Maid, it's a homer park. They think Jorge Soler could maybe even be the MVP of the series as a DH, is what some people are even predicting. Soler, remember, he struggled horribly for the Royals and kind of got hot, and then the Royals traded him. Since he went to the Braves after the trade deadline, Soler hit 269, 14 homers, and just 55 games. With the Royals, he hit like 200 and hit 13 homers, and a lot of those are in the last 2 weeks before he was traded. So it's worked out for Soler.
Six in the last week.
Yeah, right. He got red hot. He had a couple multi-homer games.
Yeah.
So Soler is with the Braves. So another reason why I'm going to cheer for the Braves, because I like Soler. And, you know, he had that great season, 48 homers. And then, of course, that was tied by Salvi this year. But I'm going to cheer for Soler as well in that situation. And I'm all in on the Braves, which means I'm going to be highly disappointed when the Astros win.
There's more of a reason, just connection-wise and everything, to cheer for the Braves, right?
Sure. Dayton Moore used to be a GM.
Was there, and, and, you know, there's been some other guys that have gone from the Royals to the Braves in the past.
Braves is a solid, classy organization. Yeah. The Astros are cheaters.
It's kind of a similar kind of situation. You know, obviously a different market, but a similar kind of build that the Royals did, you know. And it's kind of that thing that you kind of like to see. I want the Braves, like you just said, because they're going against the Astros, who nobody wants to win right now, I don't think, except for a very small sect of fans that live in Houston, Texas.
Exactly.
I think the rest of the country is cheering for the Braves to win this one.
Well, if there's anybody that understands the signals when the Astros cheat, Charlie Morton is the starting pitcher for the Braves tonight in game one, and he knows all about the Houston cheating stuff because he was part of that team that won World Series and made it to lots of playoff appearances. And Framber, which is a great first name, Framber Valdez will start game one, a lefty who had an outstanding start his last time out against Boston. And he's a young pitcher, so we'll see if he handles the pressure. That'll be tonight. That's the pitching matchup, and I would imagine by at least the fifth inning, both starters will be out, and neither one will qualify for the win.
Yeah, you pull out all the stops in these things, and if there's any issues with either one of them, they're going to be out.
Can you come back from losing game one? Sure you can, but percentage-wise, in almost any sport, you win game one, your percentage of winning basically goes from 50%, 50-50, obviously, before the series starts, to almost 70%. Now, doesn't mean you win, obviously, but it's always good to get that leg up right off the bat.
Definitely.
Very important.
No matter what
series, especially if the Braves can steal one on the road.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the pressure's on the Astros, in my opinion. I hope the Braves can keep it going. It's amazing. The Braves have had all those injuries. Their best player ripped up his knee.
Yeah.
Ronald Acuna, he's their best player.
Yeah, it's like if Acuna was playing, you imagine how good this team would be.
I do wonder, though. He's kind of flamboyant and everything. I wonder if, chemistry-wise, that actually was a blessing in disguise.
Could have been.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe there's no distractions of him showing up people and, you know, people getting upset, people wanting to try to hit him. Maybe it allows him to focus more.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Just throwing it out there. Cardinals named their new skipper. God, I'm old. Oliver Marmol is 35. Just to put this in perspective, I was 10 and he wasn't even born yet. But anyway, he is the new manager of the St. Louis Cardinals. He's the youngest Cardinals manager since Marty Marion back in 1951. We all remember Marty.
Oh, yeah.
You bet.
Marmol served last season as the Cardinals bench coach under Mike Schilt, say that carefully, and has been a part of the team's Major League Baseball staff since 2017. So that is the new manager of the St. Louis Cardinals. I heard Mike Matheny was interested. The Cardinals said, no thanks, stay in KC. I'm a kidding. It's a joke. Might have been a bad one, but anyway. The Broncos got a linebacker in a trade. Rams trading Kenny Young to the Broncos. They have all kinds of injuries at the linebacker spot. So there's that. Chiefs, is there anything you want to touch upon with the Chiefs? I think we covered a lot yesterday, but Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest will be with us to talk about the Chiefs tomorrow on the Sports Ticket about 9:30. Also have K-State in focus tomorrow as well. It was funny. I saw something put on Twitter. You know, when you're going back and look at the film, the Kansas City secondary really wasn't that bad. But what really stands out is they don't get any pressure on the quarterback. You think?
It took you took you seven games to figure that out.
If the Chiefs could just improve in that area, then their defense, they'll improve significantly. If somebody gives me a lot of money, I will suddenly become rich.
Yeah. You don't even need to watch the games. You just look at the number of sacks they have as a team, and you can tell they have issues with their pressure, getting pressure on the quarterback and getting sacks.
If I remember correctly, Ben Neiman has as many sacks as Chris Jones does, and Ben Neiman's making a lot less money. So, yeah, that's kind of pointing out the obvious. I'm like, dude, it took you until October 25th to figure this out? Like, they haven't got pass rush all season long. And that is, that's the secondary, the reason, I mean, yeah, I hear, well, we should have invested in better corners. Listen, in this day and age, you've got to have a depth in corners because you got to play, you know, sometimes 4, 5, 6 corners in some situations, or safeties, combination of safeties and corners. And you have rush four and you got one linebacker, okay? Sometimes there's no linebackers on the field. I get that. But you've got to get some kind of pass rush, because if you don't, you'll be picked apart by the best quarterbacks in the league. I don't care how good you are as a corner, especially when you've got the rules going against you. It's all in favor of the offense. So this is very, very simple to me, and it's number one concern I have for the Chiefs. And honestly, this, and I will agree with this guy, if the Chiefs could improve in one area that would help the team the most right now, well, there's two areas, but I'll go with number one, pass rush. If they could get a pass rush, defensive line gets a pass rush. Now, the pass rush means nothing if you get gashed by the running game.
Yeah.
But they're getting hurt in both ways, the run and the pass. It don't matter. We went through the stats yesterday.
And it's the front four that can't stop any of it, right? That's how you get gashed in the running games. Your front four's not stopping the run either.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And so then the other thing, of course, and I think this is very fixable, and that is, of course, cut down on the turnovers. I think that's very fixable, although I have to say, if Orlando Brown's going to keep getting smoked off the left tackle spot, then Mahomes is going to have some fumbles, and he might not make it through the season. You know, the Chiefs traded a first-round pick for Orlando Brown. He wanted to play left tackle. He was playing right tackle with the Ravens. The Ravens, and I remember we talked about this. It seemed like it was too obvious. Like, the Chiefs got a steal. I remember we talked about it and said, you know, maybe there's a red flag here because the Ravens traded him to the Chiefs, who they're chasing for a first-round pick. Now, granted, they were going to save money, but Brown would have stayed with the Ravens had he said, I'll play right tackle. The Ravens said that's where they wanted him. Brown says, I want to play left tackle. They said, okay, fine, and they let him walk. They traded him for a first-round pick, and people thought that the Chiefs fleeced the Ravens, and we might be actually finding out that the Ravens fleeced the Chiefs because the Chiefs got the more money to pay Brown right now. Then they got to decide whether they're going to tag him, give him a long-term deal, which right now I'm going to pray that they don't. And I'm also going to pray they don't give a big deal to Tyrann Mathieu either, not because I don't like Tyrann Mathieu, but because the defense is bad with him, so what's the difference without him? But Orlando Brown, he might be best suited at right tackle. And here's the other thing that's really scary. I thought this offensive line was going to get better. I really did. Three rookies. I thought Niang was okay at right tackle. I mean, there's times he got beat, but so is Orlando Brown. Why couldn't Brown, and you're probably not going to do it now, I get it, although you can move guys around all the time. I mean, Andrew Wiley had to move around last year, all the injuries. Why couldn't you move Brown to right tackle? The question is, who plays left tackle? That's the problem. Who would play left tackle? And you don't have anybody. So that's why you don't put him at right tackle. But I think down the line, if the Chiefs are thinking Orlando Brown can help this team, I think the future for him is not at left tackle. I think the future for him is a right tackle. And the other concern is when Lucas Niang can't hold down the right tackle spot and Mike Remmers is back in there as a starter. That's not a good sign either. Now, Remmers wasn't horrible the other day. Brown was worse. And so we sit here and we go, wow, the Chiefs' offensive line. Creed Humphrey's been, he's graded out very well at center. He's done a good job. Yeah. Trey Smith's had his ups and downs. I think overall, good guy at right guard. He'll be fine. Right tackle, they've got questions there. Niang hasn't grabbed onto the job, and Remmers is not the long-term solution. Left guard, you've spent a lot of money on Joe Tooney, and his deal is going to accelerate next year against the cap. And the left tackle is Orlando Brown, and you're going to have a serious decision to make after this season, what you're going to do with him, who he's still a very young guy. Maybe he will figure it out and get better later in the year, understanding the system better, understanding where Mahomes likes to step up or step back or whatever. But let's go back to the defense. Do you know that 25% of the Chiefs' cap is spent on the defensive line? And that's, and we're just talking about how that's got to be the better area. That has to be better. Based on the finances, based on the money you're spending, it has to be better. It should be better. And if it is better, if it is actually better over the next 9 games or 10 games, then the Chiefs do have a chance to make the playoffs. But if it keeps playing as poorly as it is, and it's not even getting close to the quarterback, and you got a blitz to get there, this defense will not improve. That's the one area this defense can get better. There's no question it can get better, is the front four. And if it does not get better, this defense will not get better, which means the offense can have to carry him. And we know that the offense hasn't been able to do that lately. I hope they can. Maybe they'll refine what they've been doing and be able to score almost every possession and cut out the turnovers. But it's the defensive line. And here's the other thing. People tell me, I had this conversation yesterday with somebody. They're like, well, Clark, they're going to get rid of, and Hitchens going to get rid of. And if they don't re-sign Matthew, there's going to be a lot of money available. I said, not as much as you think. I said, Chris Jones' money, it accelerates. It goes, we're going to pay even more money to Chris Jones next year on the cap. Mahomes' contract starts to kick in next year, all right? So, yes, there's going to be more flexibility, but you also got the dead cap money, the money you still got to pay to get rid of Frank Clark and Anthony Hitchens. And Matthew's going to be a free agent, so you don't have any buyout there or dead cap money. So those are things to think about as well. And, oh, by the way, Tyreek Hill's coming up to get extended. So you're going to break the bank for Tyreek Hill? I think you probably are, because if you don't have Tyreek Hill on this team, that takes away a gigantic weapon. And I've said this for a few years, the Chiefs, I thought, were going to draft a tight end that was going to be heir apparent to Kelce, because I think Kelce is just a matter of time before he just completely wears down. I hope I'm wrong, but these are guys on second contracts. They're not, and they better not get a third contract. If they get a third contract at the age of 34, 35, this team's doomed, because teams and players decelerate and go south when their best players age. And you don't want to waste prime years of Mahomes hanging on to the past. You just can't do that. And let's, my good friend Sermon Petra, 810WHB yesterday, he's been telling me this. I had lunch with him over the summer. Him and I have been talking, we're talking about it. We've texted back and forth about this. And he's always claimed, he goes, everybody thinks the salary cap's a myth. You can just move it around any which way you can and which way you want. And he says that's not the case at all. He said, yes, you can move money around, you can be creative, but it's still, you have to deal with it. And he said it when Chris Jones got signed. And he was against Chris Jones getting signed. I was against it. You were against it for the long-term extension. And he said, the bill will come due. You will have to pay the bill plus interest at some point. And he told me in our lunch in Kansas City early this summer, sitting down right across from him, he told me, he said, I worry that the Chiefs have mortgaged some of the prime years of Mahomes' career. They've mortgaged a few years for the short term of being all in to go back to back like they did. And he said, a lot of people are like, well, hey, it worked. We almost won the Super Bowl. But we didn't. The goal was to win it. They didn't. So that's still no better than if you didn't make the playoffs. You did not win the Super Bowl. You get judged, Mahomes and his legacy and the Chiefs, on Super Bowl wins, not Super Bowl appearances. Mm-hmm. So you got one Super Bowl, then you went all in, and guess what? It didn't affect them as much last year financially, but now it is. It's hurting them this year in so many ways. And as he pointed out, it's going to hurt you in next year. He said the whole thing about running it back and going after that Super Bowl last year was that you're going to mortgage the next 2 years. And he seems prophetic right now. Now, he didn't think they would be 3-4. You know, he thought they'd be 12-5. That was his prediction.
Anybody thought that.
He said 12-5. A lot of people had them 14-3, 15-2. He said, you just can't keep doing what you're doing. He said, I actually thought 12-5. And now he's sitting there going, well, I was wrong on that too. I was too optimistic. But there's a point in time where the bill is due, and the Chiefs' bill, they have to pay it. They got to pay it this year, and they got to pay it next year, but they're really paying for it this year. And that's why you don't have hardly any team except maybe the Patriots that can do and be so dominant for a longer period of time, because this league is built on basically not having somebody win year in and year out. This when you win Super Bowls, the price of all your players go up. We said that right after they won the Super Bowl. The price of Mahomes goes sky high. The price for Kelsey goes up. The price for Hill goes up. Tyrann Mathieu, when he's up for an extension, his price is going to go up. We talked about Chris Jones' price went up. All of it goes up. Breshawn Breeland being a free agent, that goes up. That's the price you pay to win a championship. What happened to the Royals? The Royals had to spend more money to keep certain guys and then gave money to everybody. Like, you get a ring and you get a car and you get a contract. And how'd that work out? You got to understand, I love you guys bringing a Super Bowl to Kansas City. I love that you brought a World Series to Kansas City. But we want to be competing for championships year in and year out, not have to rebuild it and then go back at it. Now, with the Chiefs, they're always going to be able to reload as long as they have 15 as their quarterback. But for the Royals, have they ever sniffed the playoffs since then? No. They went all in, which was great. And they did the right thing by going all in. Don't get me wrong. They made the trades. They got the World Series championship. They did the right thing. The mistake they made was giving the money to too many people after they won the World Series and kept guys too long and didn't trade them. They hung on thinking they could still win another year, and they were wrong. And are the Chiefs maybe going to do that? That's my question. Are the Chiefs going to hang on to a few of these players longer than they should, say, for one more year into next year? And then how much does that hurt them down the line? Because this is Mahomes' prime of his career. We were sitting here and people were talking about it and joking about it. After the Chiefs won Super Bowl I and after the Chiefs made it to the Super Bowl last year before they played the Bucks, you know what everybody was talking about? Dynasty. That bothered me. As soon as the Chiefs won their first Super Bowl talking dynasty, that bothered me. I was like, let's win two before we start saying that. But that's their goal. That was what they wanted to do. And so they were all in to try to get two because teams don't go back-to-back. And the Chiefs almost nearly did it. But the Chiefs have done something that teams rarely do. They've gone to three straight AFC title games. That doesn't happen, man. Yeah. That doesn't happen. They've hosted them. That doesn't happen. And we sit here and we should have seen this coming. Well, we just automatically think they're going to do it 4 years in a row. And so when the Chiefs won the first Super Bowl and they go into Super Bowl 55 and they think they're invincible, including myself, you're sitting there going, yeah, dynasty. How many? Mahomes can get the five. Is he going to catch Brady? Well, he might not get six. But if he beats Brady here, he'll have two. Brady will have six. Oh, he can get the five. Oh, yeah. Now you're sitting here halfway through. What are we, 6 months, 8 months, 9 months later? Yeah, 9 months later, we're sitting here going, I don't know if the Chiefs are going to win another Super Bowl. Isn't that crazy how quickly it can change? Well, why did it so quickly change? Because the Chiefs gave a lot of money to certain players who are not performing, and it is absolutely hamstringing this team. And it's going to for next year as well. There'll be a little bit of flexibility getting rid of some contracts. But let's be honest. Chris Jones, you could have four, five, six players instead of Chris Jones. Don't you think there's a better chance that one of those six players could perform just as well as Chris Jones? Yeah.
Doesn't take much. So,
not take much to get more than one assisted tackle in a game and not even try to tackle Derrick Henry on another play. So those are the things that have caught up to the Kansas City Chiefs. And when people sit here and they say, well, the cap is just a myth, they're wrong. It is not a myth. The Chiefs are dealing with it. As my friend Seren said, he is so absolutely dead on, straight on correct. The bill has come due. And the bill didn't come due last year. It was on the horizon. And the Chiefs knew they were going to have to pay it financially. The problem is they're paying for it on the field because these guys, Frank Clark, Anthony Hitchens, and Chris Jones, are not performing. Mahomes is performing fine. Yes, he's got some turnovers, but he's fine, okay? He's worth every penny they're paying him right now because he's actually lower on the pay scale this year with the salary cap. Kelsey's earning his money. Hill's earning his money. You know, guys that aren't earning their money right now, you could say Orlando Brown. You can definitely say Chris Jones. You can definitely say Frank Clark. You could say Anthony Hitchens. And you could even, if you want to, could say Tyrann Mathieu isn't either right now.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got your highest paid players on defense aren't playing, but you're paying them to not play very well, you wonder why the Chiefs are where they are right now? It's not some kind of gigantic mystery, and it doesn't require rocket science.
Nah, it doesn't require any thought whatsoever if you understand the game like we were talking about yesterday. Like, you know what's going on, and you understand how they're supposed to be playing and the money that they're making and the effort that they're putting out, which is terrible for some of them. And I don't think that's just Chris Jones anymore. You know, we dog on Chris Jones' effort, but what kind of effort is Frank Clark really putting forward? You know, what kind of effort are all these other guys putting forward? I don't think I ever question Hitch's effort. He just doesn't perform all the time the way he should for what he's making. but he's hurt right now, so it doesn't really matter. But yeah, it's pretty clear what the issue is, and you can't fix that. And it's a lower salary cap this year too, so that bill comes due earlier because you don't have as much money to work with this year as you thought you might too.
Right.
So now you really even have to do even more with the salary cap and try to figure that out. It's going to go up next year again, but you know, there's so many things that are coming in on that you cannot afford to be paying these guys that kind of money and them not performing.
I'll give you one more example. This is what I tried to say yesterday on the show in regards to people getting caught up in the offense and saying the offense, and they just overlook how bad the defense is. They know they're not, I mean, technically not overlooking it, but they're starting to not talk about it because you just accept that the defense is so bad. And then people tell me, what's the biggest concern of the Chiefs, and is it offensive line? And no, it's defense. It's always been defense. And so then people are like, well, I don't understand, like, how you can say that the defense, how it infects the offense. I'm like, you don't? Okay, first of all, let me just talk about the play on the field. I already covered that yesterday. How does it infect the entire team? First of all, the defense is so bad that you got guys returning kickoffs 6 yards deep in the end zone. That affects your special teams. Boom, right there, okay? And half the time we get penalties, so we're now starting at the 10, which affects and impacts the offense. But the offense is pressing because the defense stinks so bad. So there's no doubt the whole team's been infected by the poor defense. But I'll go one step further. You know what's also infected this team? Spending $96 million, the second most of any team, on the defense. And let me give you an example. So you may sit here and go, well, why didn't the Chiefs? Well, Orlando Brown's no good. So you want to focus on Orlando Brown, the offensive line, as a Chiefs fan. You suddenly want to play rope-a-dope, and you want to play whack-a-mole, and you want to jump from defense to offense, and because, you know, we've been talking about defense so much, we want to start casting all our stones at Orlando Brown. Okay, fine. So you're going to sit here and say, well, even though you weren't saying it at the time, but now you will, because that's easy in hindsight. Well, Orlando Brown, he sucks. So why didn't we sign Alejandro Villanueva, who is a free agent for the Pittsburgh Steelers? Why didn't we sign him? And we could have kept our first-round draft pick, and we could have drafted a pass rusher. You know what? That's a good thought. Let me explain why the Chiefs didn't do that. And this goes back to the defense infecting the offense yet again. When you're strapped for cash, you can't give Alejandro Villanueva $14 million over 2 years with $8 million guaranteed. Why do I come up with those numbers? Because that's what he got. And guess who paid him? The Ravens traded Brown for a first-round pick and got a pass rusher who absolutely cost the Chiefs the game, forcing a fumble against Clyde Edwards-Helaire, signed a veteran offensive lineman because they still had money available. All right? They decided, we're not going to give Brown a long-term deal down the line anyway. Traded him, got a first-round pick out of it. They never meant to hold on to Brown for extended time anyway. And why would the Chiefs trade for Orlando Brown, Dusty? Because they are cap-strapped.
Don't have to worry about it.
They're cap-strapped. Brown makes 3.4. Okay, 3.4 versus $8 million guaranteed. And I don't even know exactly Villanueva's cap number. But the bottom line is Brown was cheaper. But it comes at a price, which is a first-round pick. But that doesn't cost you money. You send the draft pick away, but it doesn't cost you money because you never signed that first-round pick. You gave them to the Ravens in exchange for Orlando Brown. Why did the Chiefs go get a cheaper guy, at least for this year? Why did they do that? Why did they spend and trade a first-round pick to get a guy that's making $3.4 million? Because the defense, Chris Jones, Frank Clark, Anthony Hitchens, Tyrann Mathieu, the Chiefs are spending $96 million on defense. The Chiefs had to come up with a creative way to improve the offensive line. They saved some money with Schwartz and Fisher being cut. Both are hurt. One's not even on a team now anyway, Schwartz. So don't sit and tell me that was a mistake. Fisher isn't he came back with an Achilles sooner than we thought. He's not exactly a pro bowler right now with the Colts. So let's not go gaga over that, okay? And they were both costing you money. So you got cheaper there, but you gave all the money to Clark. You gave all the money to Hitchens. You gave all the money to Jones, and that has hamstrung you to where you make other decisions. It's a trickle-down effect, and that's another way the defense has infected the offense. You then reached for a guy that hasn't played left tackle in this league to play left tackle and protect the $500 million man. And it's not working. So the GM of the Chiefs, Brett Beach, is in this business, and the job is to get it right. Nobody's going to hit 1,000, like Seren said. Nobody's going to hit 1,000. Nobody's going to get A+. But he's paid to get it right. Orlando Brown has to be the left tackle for the Chiefs when you trade a first-round pick. He's got to be better than he's been. And there were people that watched Orlando Brown play. Serena even told me this at lunch as well. He said he showed me a highlight of Orlando Brown in a playoff game against the Bills last year, and it was an interception, and Orlando Brown didn't even try. As soon as the ball was picked off, he didn't even move. He didn't even try. And he said, is that concerning to you? That's what Seren told me. He goes, maybe I'm making a bigger deal out of it than I should, is what Seren said. But he goes, there's something somebody pointed out to me. I saw it. Isn't that a little concerning? I said, I think it's a little concerning that a team would get rid of a guy in his prime at a tackle spot to a team they're chasing. I said, I think that's a red flag. Here we are. Orlando Brown has been god-awful. He was the other day, at least. Maybe he can figure it out. Hopefully he can. But you wonder how the defense impacts the offense. There's another way, and it has nothing to do with on the field. That's off the field financially, and then affects you on the field. You gave up a first-round pick to bring in a guy to be your left tackle who gets beat consistently the other day against Bud Dupree, who's coming off a torn ACL. So once again, the defense and the decisions on defense, you're getting the worst defense for the second best price. You're paying the second most amount of money for the worst defense in the league. That's a really bad deal. And on top of that, it's hamstrung you in other ways to where you could have helped your offense and hurt you there, and then it hurts the offense when they're pressing actually on the field as well. I mean, it all starts from the rotten part of the tree is right there. It's the defense. And it's both on and off the field in regards to the cap and the on-field performance. It's affecting the offense. It's affecting decisions the Chiefs have made on offense. It affected them trading a first-round pick because they could not afford to get Orlando Villanueva because of Chris Jones and Frank Clark's contracts. They could not do that, okay? So then they go the Brown route and trade draft capital. The other thing is the Chiefs are quick to trade draft picks. They always have not nearly as many draft picks as most teams. If I can throw my darts at eight guys instead of five, don't I have a better chance of finding somebody? I mean, just percentages. I mean, well, Darius Sneed was a fourth-round draft pick. If I had maybe a couple more fourth-round draft picks, wouldn't I have a better chance of having this team improved? And I would have to pay a rookie deal, and I'd have to pay for a free agent to fill the hole. Maybe I wouldn't have to pay Tyrann Mathieu if I could draft that safety in the fourth round that's my guy. Those type of things. Yeah. Maybe I wouldn't have to go get Joe Tooney and pay him money because I can get that left guard with my fourth or fifth round pick. Or maybe I don't have to go trade for Orlando Brown because I kept my first round pick and I'm going to draft tackle. Now, they obviously didn't think there's anybody in the draft in the first round is going to be a great tackle, so they decided Brown was better. And we all bought into it. And as of now, the answer is he's not.
Yeah.
So another way the defense...
Game, you can tell right now that that's not what they wanted or what they expected from Orlando Brown.
That's another way the defense has hurt this offense. But everybody keep telling me, just keep singing that song and dance all you want about how this offense is the offense is just as big a reason why this team is where it is today. Sorry, I'm not going to buy in with it. I'm not buying in. I'm not buying what you're selling. Sorry, not going to do it. As George Bush said one time, not going to do it.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.